Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
You are my friend, you are special. You are my friend, you're special to me. You are the only one like you. Like you, my friend, I like you.
That is Francois Clemens making his first appearance on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood in 1968. That audio courtesy of Fred Rogers Productions. His role as Officer Clemens on the show was groundbreaking. He was a positive image of an African American at a time when racial tensions in America were high. And as he writes in his new memoir, he found in Fred Rogers a friend, a mentor, and along with Fred's wife, Joanne, a family. Francois Clemens' book out today is called Officer Clemens, and he joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been excited about meeting you and hearing what you want to know and what your audience might want to know.
Well, and as you say in your introduction, this is a book about your relationship with Mr. Rogers, but also a memoir of your life. And I wonder, first of all, because so many people know you as Officer Clemens, why you wanted to tell your story in this way?
I had a definite purpose. I wanted people to understand the grit and the substance of how I got to be who I am. I didn't want them to misunderstand and think Fred Rogers discovered you. He did not. I knew that I could sing and I knew who I was before I met Mr. Rogers. However, I would never have had the kind of career, the rocket charge, had he not fallen in love with my voice. But you wouldn't know this guy who got there if you didn't understand the women, particularly, who were dominant in my early life, starting with my great-grandmother, Laura May, my grandmother, my mother, and my aunts. There were a lot of women. Mm-hmm.
Well, and you grew up in the South,
and you
had an abusive father, and eventually an abusive stepfather. Right, exactly. Your mother even stabbed your father once when he attacked her. How did that shape your childhood and your life, that kind of situation in the beginning?
Well, Jeremy, you certainly put your finger right on it. It was horrible, and I was wounded. I was walking around very, very unhappy for a long time before I was able to look at those situations without, you know, feeling nervous or getting sick. They were a nightmare. I had physical nightmares, or nightmares when you go to sleep. To see the two people that you love was devastating to a boy of 2-3 years old. I was so young. Mm-hmm. And to see all that blood, to this day, I can barely stand the sight of blood. As a matter of fact, I wasn't able to talk about it until I went into therapy. And Fred was the one who convinced me that I wasn't crazy. What he said to me, you are bleeding. That's why you are going through some of these issues that you talk about. And you need to go talk to someone professionally. And I listened to him very carefully. I trusted him implicitly. So I went and got in touch with a psychiatrist of Columbia University who helped me to understand that I was just a boy. And my parents were not fighting and acting aggressively like that because of something I did.
Well, it sounds like even before you had that realization, when you were living through it, that music was sort of your refuge. When did you first realize that you were so musically talented and that you loved it so much?
Well, when my parents were fighting and I was so lost, I sang the songs that my grandfather, I thought they were the songs that he had sung about his African ancestors, which were my ancestors. And he didn't live very long because of the flood that came to that part of the country, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. And I began to sing those songs when he was lost. I was grieving. That was the moment that I started singing out loud and in front of strangers. And that became my retreat. But people heard me and said, oh, that sounds great. What are you singing? And I told them, I don't know the words that my grandfather sang.
Well, clearly people recognized it, just natural ability and natural talent as you got older. Although, as you point out in this book, you still encountered a lot of racism from people who didn't want to work with you as a musician along the way. Guidance counselor told you not to apply to Oberlin, that you should go to a trade school instead.
Yes, yes. I, another one of those open sores that I carry around. All my life, people have underestimated me. That's how I verbalize it. And Mrs. Kreisen, that counselor who was insisting that I go to this vocational school, I lost it in her office. And that was the moment that Diva Clemens was born, because I stood up. And I don't want to say anything coarse on the air, but I was no longer a child with her, because she was going to take my dream. So I got backbone. And I told her she doesn't know who I am, and that she had no right to talk to me that way, and that I was going to go to Oberlin and become a famous singer, and there was nothing she could do about it.
Well, and you did become a famous singer, and Fred Rogers obviously discovered you. You became a part of his show singing songs such as this one. Listen.
There are many ways to say I love you. There are many ways to say I care about you. Many ways, many ways, many ways to say I love you.
Francois Clemens, what was it like to sing on that show, to sing with Fred Rogers?
He had a way of making whatever I was doing deeper and richer and more enjoyable, more fun, more polished. I sang for such joy for him, because if he didn't like an arrangement, he might say, we need to change this word or that note. But generally speaking, once I started singing, the roles were tremendously reversed. He was a fan and I was the star.
Now, there's another aspect of your relationship with him that I want to ask you about, and it goes back to something that obviously comes up throughout this book and came up throughout your life, which was your sexual orientation. Your mother didn't accept that you were gay. It took quite a bit of time for you to accept it as well. And when Fred Rogers found out about it, he advised you not to reveal it publicly.
That's only partially true, yes. The other part of that is, if I had chosen not to be on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, then I could do whatever I chose to do in my private life. There was a price to pay to be with him, and I thought it was too much to lose. I was determined to participate in this historic television program for children. This man who had a way of communicating and hypnotizing in a way, his intensity, his sincerity, made people want to be with him and tell him things. And the short of the long story is that I began to learn the rich dividends that an audience pays when you are sincere and honest and open. And when I was not on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, I put those effects into my work.
Francois Clemens, you were part of a moment that was very important in television history, and I want to play it for our listeners.
Oh, there's Officer Clemens. Hi, Officer Clemens. Come in.
Mr. Rogers, how are you?
Fine. Won't you sit down?
Oh, sure. Just for a moment.
It's so warm. I was just putting some water on my feet.
Oh, it sure is.
Would you like to join me?
It looks awfully enjoyable, but I don't have a towel or anything.
Oh, you share mine.
Okay,
sure.
The two of you put your feet into a wading pool at a time when swimming pools in the U.S. were segregated. At the time, were you aware of how significant that moment was?
No, because I thought it was kind of light. I was expecting something like maybe calling Dr. King up or calling the president up or saying, you know, this is immoral and some kind of curse on these people. And he didn't do that at all. He said, come sit with me. And he said, you can share my towel. My God, those were powerful words. It was transformative to sit there with him thinking to myself, uh-oh, something wonderful is happening here. This is not what it looks like. It's much bigger. And many people, as I've traveled around the country, share with me what that particular moment meant to them, because he was telling them, you cannot be a racist. And one guy, or more than that, but one particular, I'll never forget, said to me, when that program came on, we were actually discussing the fact that black people were inferior. And Mr. Rogers cut right through it, he said. And he said, essentially, that scene ended that argument.
Now, when he died, you decided not to go to his funeral. And the reason is pretty interesting. Tell us why.
Well, it wasn't really my decision. It was Fred's decision still. I was conducting a choral workshop here in Vermont for the whole state, some 250 kids. I arranged a program, sent the music to their music teachers, and I was at home, and there were two or three phone calls. And when I finally got up, and answered the phone, it was Lady Aberlin saying, Fred is dying and we think he's going to be gone, friends. But you need to talk to Joanne. She has something to tell you. So I called Joanne, and what she basically said to me was, you are not to come home for any of these funeral services here in Pittsburgh, because Fred said you cannot disappoint all of those children. So I just literally sat down crying because I was so conflicted, and I felt I had to do honor. I had to honor that directive from him.
Well, it is a wonderful memoir, and I think it's such a great thing to read right now at this moment when we're all kind of disconnected from the rest of the world, and we can go into this this just fascinating life that you've had. Francois Clemens, the book is called Officer Clemens. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Cleaning up a room can say I love you. Hanging up your coat before you're asked to do it. Drawing special pictures for the holidays and making plays.
You'll find many ways to say I love you. You'll find many ways.
And you can read an excerpt from the book at hereandnow.org.